Next case is 01746, testify counsel versus John Maine Kelly. Mr. Kettlewell.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, Counsel. May it please the Court, my name is Charles John Kettlewell. I am here today on behalf of Respondent John Maine Kelly. Brief explanation regarding Mr. Altman's absence. Mr. Altman was contacted by Mr. Kelly for this appeal and subsequently learned he was going to be out of the country and requested, and with Mr. Kelly's consent, I am here today on Mr. Altman's behalf. At its core, our argument is about the appropriate sanction for this case and this default judgment. We are recommending a sanction of indefinite suspension with the opportunity to petition for reinstatement after 6 months. We believe that this sanction accomplishes a number of objectives, primarily by shifting the burden of proof to establish by clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Kelly has rehabilitated himself and that he is fit to re-enter the practice of law. It protects the public until such time that a hearing has been held to determine the facts of the case. It penalizes Mr. Kelly for his failure to cooperate in the investigation, but it also provides him the opportunity to distinguish himself from those cases which normally result in an indefinite suspension with 2-year waiting period before the attorney can apply for reinstatement. And gives him the opportunity, if he can carry his burden of proof in that reinstatement process, to continue the work that he does for his community. And keep in mind that there's always still the disincentive to not apply too early if he is not, in fact, prepared and able to carry that burden. Currently, the board's recommended sanction of an indefinite suspension with 2 years before being able to reapply petition for reinstatement carries with it under GovBar Rule 510B a mandatory waiting period of 2 years. And as it stands, that puts Mr. Kelly in the same category as attorneys who have commingled or literally stolen thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars from their clients.
But Mr. Kelly, well, there's a real serious pattern here, is there not, with your client? I mean, he totally didn't respond. The clients didn't respond to the efforts of disciplinary counsel. He didn't respond at the hearing. Now he comes forward with a lot of evidence that your brief tried to raise, which is not really appropriate, it seems to me. He had an opportunity. Isn't he precisely the kind of person that we would not, kind of lawyer, we would not want to say, well, you're going to sit out for a year or 2 years, and then you virtually automatically, if you've complied with CLE and so forth, you get your license back. Isn't he exactly the kind of person we'd want to look at before, take a close look at him, before we would readmit him to the practice if he's suspended?
That is someone we would want you to take a close look at, and that is why we were recommending an indefinite suspension where there will, in fact, be a hearing to take that close look at him prior to his being reinstated. What we're requesting is that hearing not have to take place 2 years in the future. Admittedly, he did not respond to numerous letters of inquiry, but he did get his head out of the sand, so to speak, at the 11th hour, seek representation in this appeal.
But how do we, I mean, he did that finally, but how do we know, isn't 2 years a pretty good, I mean, we have to say to the public when we give someone their license, this person is fit to practice law, fit to represent you. Give your trust to this lawyer. Don't we want more than just a few months to review his change in attitude, if that's what this is?
I would believe we want as much time as it would take, and if in this instance 6 months is adequate, and in another instance perhaps 2 years would not be adequate, then we believe that the rule could be changed to allow the flexibility for the court to exercise its discretion in that regard. As far as the actual conduct goes that led to the allegations of the complaint, had he cooperated, he would have most likely been facing a sanction somewhere between a public reprimand and a term certain suspension with some of that time stayed. He did not cooperate. Conversely, had it turned out that there were no violation of disciplinary rules other than the failure to cooperate, likewise, as both our brief and relators states in the Mulbach case, he would likely be facing something akin to a six-month suspension with all time stayed. The reason he's facing the indefinite suspension, understandably, is because he did not show up earlier. And relator states that he has offered no explanation for his failure to cooperate and no explanation for his lack of participation, and further argues that these arguments are not properly before the court. GovBar Rule 5, Section 8 provides the opportunity to file a response to the show cause order with objections in a brief. We are not trying to get facts into the record here improperly. We are asking the court to take judicial notice of certain facts that the court can take judicial notice of, such as his age and the lack of a previous disciplinary record, which was not noted in either the panel or the board's report as a mitigating circumstance.
Well, let me ask you exactly, as I read Mr. Altman's brief, he's pretty much left it open to us. A lesser sanction than would be the case with the underlying misconduct of the kind that raises questions as to dishonesty and integrity is what he's asking for. Are you requesting a specific sanction or just arguing that the indefinite suspension is too much?
We're requesting a specific sanction in that the indefinite suspension can serve the purposes that it is designed to serve in shifting the burden to him and having a hearing before he can be reinstated, and understand that the court would have reservations of giving a term certain suspension on this because we don't have a record. We don't know what exactly did or did not occur with respect to the allegations of the complaint. That is the purpose of trying to put some facts in that the court can take judicial notice of. We're not trying to make any legal argument on the record. There is no record. We can't make a legal argument on the record. We're pointing out that this court has in the past consistently held that each case should be decided on its own merits. And the court has in the past exercised its discretion in changing the rules, modifying the rules, such that a sanction can fit a particular fact pattern. And would reference 1988, the court changed GovBar Rule 5, a mandatory enhancement provision. The following year, the court granted credit for time served and interim suspension for felony convictions. In 1990, the court declined to order an interim suspension for felony convictions. More recently, there have been rule changes providing for resignation in lieu of discipline, the addition of Section 5A to the GovBar Rule 5, allowing for an interim remedial suspension in those cases where there is the receipt of credible evidence that an attorney poses a substantial threat prior to a conviction.
That's a rule change. That's not
that is a rule change.
Rule to a specific case.
Specifically in the 1988 cases, there was a rule change while the cases were in fact pending.
How would you have us change the rule? And you'd have us, I guess, say that the requirement for a hearing or an examination of the respondent before they're readmitted to the practice should be applied to something less than the two-year suspension, the so-called indefinite suspension.
Correct.
You would suspend him for perhaps a year or 6 months and say that, but before you are readmitted, we're going to give you the same review we give somebody who's been indefinitely suspended.
That is precisely the change that we would be requesting. And for the reasons stated. Our second proposition of law is the public policy reasons behind considering a lesser sanction or fashioning a lesser sanction than that which has been recommended by the board. And that is, at the subsequent hearing on a petition for reinstatement, if we assume for a moment that Mr. Kelly can establish that he does a lot of good work in his community, that he represents numerous clients, and that these four complaints, allegations of neglect taken in context, were not so egregious. that he didn't otherwise prejudice his clients, and in fact stayed on as counsel for at least two of them and sought to protect their interests and diligently represent them. He's frequently appointed by the Fairfield County Probate Court, and if we assume that he can establish all this and he continues to provide all these services above and beyond what normally constitutes the practice of law and representation of a client, and that he does these things for his community, if he can establish all the above, then to leave him out of the practice for 2 years and the subsequent 9 months that it would take to have the process, petition, reinstatement, so forth, actually does a disservice to the same community that you're seeking to protect under the policies for attorney discipline.
That's all pertinent and important, especially in his case, but can we find out what's happened to the four people involved?
We can find that out in the process of a petition for reinstatement.
And can we find it out now? What's the situation with the, have any of them lost money? Are any of them owed money? Are any of them worse off today than they were before they went to see him?
Not to my knowledge. I do not believe so.
So your argument is that at the end, nobody is hurt?
The argument at the end is
other than initially.
Initially, at least, yes. But again, because those aren't facts that are in the record, we're not trying to argue those into the record now, other than those facts which you can take judicial notice of, that being his age. He is, in fact, or did still, in fact, represent Mr. Whitfield, the complainant in the first count in Madison County Court after he failed to file the case in Fairfield County Court, and that was one aspect of the complaint.
But we can't consider any of these things because we have no record, but we have to take the record on its face, which shows he did A, B, C, and D.
You can consider those things that the court can take judicial notice of, and those are only his age, those cases where he has stayed involved, and the record in the underlying cases supports that. But the distinction being between a case where the conduct and then the failure to cooperate, those two items put together is what is resulting in the indefinite suspension, as opposed to the conduct, which is often done intentionally on the part of attorneys who find themselves being given the second most severe sanction in the Supreme Court's arsenal to sanction attorneys here.
Are you arguing that we cannot consider the fact that he missed mortgage payments and didn't file tax returns for his client? Is that something that's in the record, certainly? Is that something that we should consider?
No, that's certainly something that's before the court and can be considered. Excuse me?
His client was not harmed by the fact that he failed to file tax returns and mortgage payments?
They've since been filed, is my understanding. And at the time, yes, certainly.
You know,
but
I guess there'd be penalties. At least usually there are penalties if one doesn't pay the bank or the government. Well, whatever.
Are you saying that you feel that he's being punished more for not cooperating than the other allegations that are charged against him?
No, by no means. I feel that he's being punished by the two factors taken together. Either the complaint and the allegations violation of 6103, 11102A5, and A6, either that taken alone or the failure to cooperate taken alone would not likely have resulted in an indefinite suspension. So it is the two put together. It's the default judgment. And what we are arguing is that not all default judgments fall into the same category. Certainly a default judgment of this nature can be distinguished from a case where an attorney embezzled $1 million from a client and skipped the country. I want to save a minute or two for rebuttal. So in conclusion, we're here because he's receiving the same indefinite suspension that embezzlers and the worst of the attorneys who would be facing the disciplinary process would be given. And we believe that 6 months serves all the purposes of an indefinite suspension, as shifting the burden, protecting the public, and giving an opportunity for a hearing before he can be reinstated. Thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Kettlewell. Ms. Brown.
Good Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Lori Brown, counsel for Relator Disciplinary Counsel. I will admit to being somewhat surprised by counsel's argument. In his objections, objection number two, it states there are public policy reasons separate from the usual rationales for disciplinary sanctioning why this court might want to impose a lesser sanction than indefinite suspension. And I believe I just heard counsel argue outside the rule that this gentleman should be, in fact, indefinitely suspended with the possibility of reinstatement after 6 months. That's simply not the rule. The rule is that if an individual, a lawyer, is indefinitely suspended from the practice of law, they may not petition for reinstatement for 2 years. And that's what the board recommended in this case, and that's what the appropriate sanction is. If counsel is suggesting that the rule should somehow be modified, then maybe that's the course that should be taken at someone else's direction.
I think he's suggesting we have the authority to waive our rule or to create a sanction that's not specifically or expressly provided in the rule. Do you disagree with that?
Well, I disagree with that, and I mean, obviously, as I said before, this is the first time I had heard that argument, but assuming that you did have the opportunity to change that, to change the rule in order to agree with Mr. Kettlewell's argument, we believe this is not the case that you should do that on.
I don't understand the argument yet, and the response to the Chief Justice didn't help me any understand it. Aren't those two terms mutually exclusive?
The terms of...
Indefinite suspension and 6 months suspension.
The way the rule is written, if a lawyer is indefinitely suspended, he or she cannot petition for 2 years.
So 6 months, you can't have an indefinite suspension of 6 months.
No, you cannot. Not according to GovBar Rule 5.
I thought Mr. Kettlewell was saying that we have the authority to give a lesser penalty, such as 2 years. I didn't understand that he was asking us to indefinitely suspend them and consider a readmission in 6 months. Right?
That's the way I understood the argument, that counsel was suggesting, yes, that there then be, in fact, a reinstatement hearing like there would be.
I never heard of such a thing, so I didn't.
Yes, Your Honor, I was somewhat surprised myself. This is a situation where there were four cases of neglect. Four clients were neglected. Counsel suggests that it is, in fact, a situation where you could take judicial notice of the fact that he stayed on as counsel in some situations, or that he has been appointed by the probate court as a guardian in other situations. Those are not the types of things that you can take judicial notice of. Yes, his age, you can take judicial notice of that. No prior discipline. How long he's been practicing law, 45 years. Take judicial notice of all of that. But the other suggestions by counsel, for example, the fact that no clients were harmed, that is not part of the record, and that is a conclusion of law of which you cannot take judicial notice.
We throw around that term. I was going to ask Mr. Kettlewell, and I thought maybe it isn't important, but since you dwelled on it, we hear often, or you read in briefs often, courts should take judicial notice. Way back when, I guess I first started 100 years ago with this, I wondered about judicial notice. There are only two rules with regard to judicial notice. One is Evidence Rule 201. And Evidence Rule 201 says the rule governs only judicial notice of adjudicative facts, the facts of the case. And then you have Civil Rule 44.1, I think. 44.1, judicial notice shall be taken of the rules of the Supreme Court and decisional, constitutional, and public statutory law of this state. How are either of those fit? Age maybe is adjudicative fact?
And it's a matter of public record. Pursuant to GovBar Rule 6, if you call the Office of Attorney Registration, that is a matter, his date of birth is a matter of public record. That information, except for his home address and his Social Security number, are routinely given out upon request.
Okay. I'll get off of that, but you go right through the same situation. You say it's part of the public record. And say that. It says a judicially noticed fact must be one not subject to reasonable dispute in that it is either generally known within the territorial jurisdiction, generally known of the trial court, and is capable of an accurate and ready determination. And we have to take judicial notice of the public record. There's not much these days In any case, it isn't in the
public
record.
That's not public record. Yes, Your Honor. Yes, I understand. As far as the other allegations in our complaint, we alleged his year of admission, for example, and so that is part of the record in this case, for example. But moving on to the other issues in this case, by defaulting, by not answering, and to address that in a little bit more detail, this is a situation where the respondent in one grievance filed by the initial grievant, he mailed a complaint to our office. We sent letters of inquiry to this gentleman. We then subpoenaed him when he didn't answer. He came to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in response to the subpoena, told the Assistant Disciplinary Counsel who had the case at that time that he was going to submit a written response. Left the office without giving a deposition. He never did that. He was then sent letters of inquiry in three other grievances. He never submitted written responses. When we were instructed, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel was instructed to file a motion for default. The Assistant Disciplinary Counsel who had the case at that time called the respondent and said, "Are you going to file an answer?" The respondent told him that he already did. Well, in fact, no answer was ever filed. The Assistant Disciplinary Counsel told the respondent to call John Marshall at the Board of Commissioners. He did that. The respondent told John Marshall that he was going to file an answer. He never did that. This is not a person who was uninvolved in the disciplinary process. This is a person who, quite frankly, treated the disciplinary process in the exact same way as the clients were treated. They were told things would happen, and nothing happened. It's a pattern of conduct, and the only appropriate sanction is the sanction that was given out in cases like Disciplinary Counsel versus Boylan and Warren County Bar Association versus Leeser. Situations of neglect followed by a failure to cooperate warrant an indefinite suspension. He argues at one point in his brief that he did not cooperate with the Office of Disciplinary Counsel's investigations because he did not want to be faced with a situation, and I think it's the quote is, a faceless bureaucracy. Well, I'm not so sure he would even know anything about the Office of Disciplinary Counsel because he never participated at all. Had he submitted a response, had he been given an opportunity to exchange conversation with an assistant disciplinary counsel, to participate in the investigation as every attorney is allowed to do, he may have realized that it is not, in fact, a faceless bureaucracy as he describes it.
How much of this is non-cooperation by a person? How much does that enter into the sanction?
It is number one, it's named as an aggravating factor, a lack of cooperation. But yet this is a little bit beyond that in that it was alleged as a separate count. It was count five of this complaint because he completely failed to cooperate. There are situations where we have investigations where there might be some failure to cooperate within those investigations, but this was a separate count. In nine separate instances of letters that were mailed to him, of which he signed the green cards on four of them, he never responded.
Had he fully cooperated?
Yes.
And had a hearing and so forth, would your recommendation still be an indefinite suspension?
No, Your Honor, it would not.
So the underlying crimes or the allegations underlying this case would not have been, as far as you're concerned, serious enough to engender a indefinite suspension?
Your question calls for speculation because there was no evidence adduced. For example, the complaint was filed based on the allegations of the grievance. The motion for default was filed based on the allegations of the aggrieved clients. We had nothing from the respondent. We don't know whether he would have had explanations for the conduct, and perhaps when we put the clients on the witness stand, perhaps the conduct is even more egregious than we had originally alleged. So I don't know if we have the four separate cases of alleged neglect. Maybe there's more misconduct there, maybe there's less. But what we have here is a bare record, totally based on allegations of clients, supported by affidavits.
Can you go ahead and have a hearing based on what you had?
Could we have had a hearing?
Yeah.
assuming that the respondent had participated in the process?
Let's say he didn't participate. Is it always your practice that a person doesn't participate, you have no hearing?
That's correct. If no formal answer is filed, say for example a respondent doesn't participate at all with the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, won't respond, won't come to a deposition, we file a formal complaint. If they file an answer to that,
then you go by default judgment.
Well, if the respondent files an answer to the formal complaint, there's a hearing.
Same, as in this case, he didn't do anything.
Right. We are ordered by the Board of Commissioners to file a motion for default by rule. But we are also, by rule, required to give the respondent plenty of notice that we are going to do so, which is, in fact, the telephone call that Ken Donchance made to the respondent in May of 2000 when the respondent said, oh, yeah, I filed an answer. Well, he never did. He didn't file an answer.
We don't really get the facts that were involved in the case because it's a default.
That's correct, sir. Yes. Yes.
The facts could be worse or they could be better.
Yes. Disciplinary counsel in this case believes the Board of Commissioners entered the correct recommendation in recommending that Mr. Kelly be indefinitely suspended pursuant to GovBar Rule 5, Section 10. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Kettlewell, Sr., you have a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. Charles William Kettlewell. To make certain there's clarity, an indefinite suspension in which the respondent has to wait only 6 months before petitioning and going through the entire proceeding is what we are asking for. Mr. Altman had said a lesser sanction than an indefinite suspension, and this would fall in that category. There is precedence, as was previously mentioned, credit for time served for those who had received felony convictions was something that was developed by this court in case proceedings and dissenting opinions, and this court in a case that had been argued to them when mandatory enhancement existed, changed the rule while the case was pending so that a prior suspension, indefinite suspension, was something that could be taken into consideration but was no longer mandatory. In those two instances, the lawyers did not receive permanent disbarment. We're here because there is no record. But this is not a gentleman who took a cavalier attitude toward this. As stated in the brief, we can't explain why he didn't show up. But he didn't just simply thumb his nose. He's a country lawyer in Lancaster who has served many and continues to serve many in that community in ways that most lawyers do not provide services today. We are here and he is being treated, we are here because he is being treated the same with an indefinite suspension as a lawyer in a default proceeding who may have embezzled $1 million and run, may have engaged in serious bank fraud, or other very serious conduct. And what we're submitting to this court is not that you shouldn't have default judgments, nor are we submitting to this court that a person who doesn't show up before should just get a short-term certain and then automatically back in. What we're saying, though, is that those respondents who get default judgments should be looked at individually in their cases to determine how long they should have to stay out before they're afforded an opportunity to show their rehabilitation. And when there's been no prior case, then obviously we're going to get into the merits of the underlying four cases, which I think everybody has agreed, unless there's something far more egregious than alleged, would never have resulted in an indefinite suspension. Mr. Kelly apologizes to this court, which is one of the reasons that he filed the objections to this court and to the board for not having attended, for not having participated. He simply wants the earliest possible opportunity to return to his practice of law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kettlewell. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.